Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Coppens.
My name is Kathleen McGowan.
And today our special guest is Patrice Chaplin. Patrice, welcome to the show.
Hello, good evening. Thank you.
Now, for people who do not know Patrice, Patrice a few years ago wrote City of Secrets, and more recently she has released her latest book called The Portal. And both of these books delve into the mystery of Rennes-le-Château. It is a mystery which pretty much tells you a new dimension to the traditional story of Béranger Saunière and his so-called maid, Marie de Narnaud. And City of Secrets is all about the dimension of Girona, a town in northern Spain where Saunière has some connections to. So rather than me explaining all of this, Patrice, can you enlighten our listeners to the dimension which you have added to the story of Rennes-le-Château?
I first went to Girona when I was 15. I wasn't a runaway. I was running to freedom, which was great. You know, it was a fabulous trip. And I went with my friend Beryl, and we were 15, and we were basically really traveling in a way that nobody did at that time, and probably if they did it today, they couldn't do it. I mean, not safely. We were hitchhiking right through Europe, and we were going to go and find the gypsies, the ones who lived in, you know, caravans and traveled and were free, and they did the flamenco and all of that. Now, we didn't get as far as that because we got to Girona in Spain, in northeast Spain. And at that time, the city was magical. That's the only way I could... there's not a word to describe it, really. Magical doesn't quite do it. Beryl and I were very close. We were really, really... We were twin souls, in a way. And we were going to go on down south. And in fact, we did later. We did go down south and found the gypsies. But, I mean, we were more gypsies than they were. I mean, they were on HP. They had refrigerators. They were living in one place. They never moved. I mean, they danced. In those days, they danced for the love of it. But later, they had to be paid. Anyway, that's the further story. But the thing with Girona was, it was something about the light and the smell, the magnetism, the smell of the drains. There's something that it was so powerful. I couldn't leave there, and I knew that when I crossed over there was a clanking iron bridge over the river into the old part, and I thought, when I go over there, I'm gone. I'm different. I'm no longer a traveller. I'm gone. I'm there. And I wrote in the book, you know, it's like, it's where I belonged. It's just I was born in another place, you know. But no, there I was. And I met the same evening as arriving there, literally crossing the bridge, I met the poet and the conscience of Catalonia, that's what he was called. He was very charismatic. He was the leader of the political action against Franco. His name was Josep Tarrés. And he was older than me. I mean, I couldn't say I fell in love. I mean, it's just already waiting to happen. So, you know, we were together. Now, I stayed with him as his novia, which is fiancé. We were going to get married. And I was part of, but not really in, this group of people who had meetings at night. They had societies which were kind of, I would see a door close on people going into a room. I was never allowed to be in it, and my language was, you know, not up to it. I was learning, believe me, I was learning pretty fast Catalan and French, but I didn't have it good enough then. I would say the main part in Girona, the whole part of Girona, the old part is extensive, and in those days it was very ragged, anything. They had no money in the town. So it had been much as it had been since the French Wars in 1810. I think it was the last one, the French one. I think it was 1810, 1812, something like that. And so it wasn't, you know, the damage was sort of there. Of course, the Civil War had been there in the 30s. I mean, so, and they'd fought hard against Franco, lost. And so that was also, you know, this damage from that. But mainly it was from the French in that city. The main place, the main center of, like, let's say, magnetism was this house with a tower, which was owned by what they called it, the French woman. And it had a big garden with a palm tree, a royal palm tree. And the house was an ordinary sort of country house, probably built 300 years prior. And it had this kind of ornate tower, which sort of didn't fit, you know. And it didn't fit with the Roman buildings around, you know. It was a kind of stuck up rather incongruously. I did see the woman. I saw the French woman. I had no idea who she was. I mean, I thought she was the cleaning woman, but she turned out to be Maria Tordes. And Maria Tordes was a friend of the French priest Berenger Saunier. And she lived in Couillon. Now, I don't know if she was born in Couillon. Now, Couillon is near, as you know, it's near Rennes-le-Château. It's a town just below the hill. It's near Couillon. But she came from Couillon to Girona, and she was installed in the house. It was bought with black money from a society. Now, the society was... The society, they didn't call it the hidden society. They called it the private society. And at some point it changed its name to the hidden society, but it was never secret society. That was the point about it. And it was absolutely unknown. I mean, people thought it had to do with the flower show, which was run every year. The society was, in fact, made up of very established, wealthy, academic people at the top of their tree, really, who formed a group. I gather that the number was between 8 and 12, and they held a secret. They held material that was in form of documents, artifacts, and a document which explained a ritual, which gave direction through a ritual, which I think it took between 2 and 4 hours. And there were various other letters and documents which, well, the idea was they didn't see the light of day. And the thing really about the society was that they didn't do much with the material. They held on to it. Now, they owned various properties. They had money, that was for certain. And it seemed that the French woman had been placed there by the sale of the house to Saunier. And the cover for that was a lawyer called, I think his name is Sagues. He was a Catalan lawyer. Now, to find out the details of that transaction was very difficult because they never had any kind of documentation in those days. They did a handshake and handed over the money in cash. It was black money, but that's the way they did it. Now, the church, before the society, apparently the society owned the house from 1851 on. Before that, it seemed to be in the hands of the church. It was called the House of the Canons. The sale of the house to the society meant they had a place where the material that they held could be safe. That was one. And two, they built the tower. That's when they built the tower. Now, I think I've established what I can about that place. It was when I got there, I found myself there because Jean Cocteau was there. I mean, I had a magical time at the beginning in Girona because I arrived there, fall absolutely in love with this poet. I know Jean Cocteau. I mean, I think he was there about the same time, about the same day, maybe a few days later, with his friend Jean Marais and various other people were there. And he did this small, very small film in the garden and around the garden of the French woman. He was very keen. I don't think filmmaking was what he wanted to do. I think he wanted inside that house. That's what he wanted. And whether he got in or not, I don't know. But he was certainly much more interested in getting inside the tower than he was about doing this film, which is called The Blind Man. Now, Jose was very established with Cocteau. They were very, I could see they were very close. I mean, everything that happened then was very kind of visual and atmospheric because I didn't really know very much what they were saying. I was pretty lucky for them because I didn't really, at that point, know very much. But I did see that Jose did not want Cocteau to go into the house or to use any of the material. He didn't even want it filmed there. Now, later, I asked the cook. I was living in a place called the Residencia Internacional, which Jose owned. His family owned it. And he used to hide out those on the run from Franco and get them over into France, get them over the Pyrenees. That was one of the aspects of that place. Also, all the artists of the area came to the Residencia Internacional. It was a absolutely heavenly place. Umberto Eco was there for a while. They called him the Italian. There were a lot of people to do with Kabbalah around as well, actually, that a man called Salvador Espriu, which I'm probably not saying it, it's Espriu, it's Espriu. And he used to live in Arenda de Mar, which was a Spain then was unspoiled. We're talking about the 50s, you know, unspoiled. And Arenda de Mar was, he used to call it paradise. And he said, you step out of here, you just step out of paradise. It's why do it. Anyway, he used to come to the Residencia Internacional, and that's where Cocteau stayed. And there was always this kind of feeling that something was going on. There was a nucleus of energy and charged with activity. It was always centered around these people and that house of the tower. I didn't find out at that time anything other than what I could say was, yeah, the police were looking for the people who were against Franco. There were what they called the blind cars, cars without lights, which would come in the middle of the night and take people away. It was a dangerous time. You couldn't say too much. There were a lot of spies around. It was, at the same time, it was absolutely beautiful. That is how it was in the 50s. Shall I stop there for a minute?
Yeah, I just want to... I've a couple things I want to ask you. You were very young when all this starts. You're 15. And the day you walk across that bridge, you are in Wonderland. I mean, you are Alice. This is an extraordinary journey, this magical adventure that you have that lasts 50 years and continues to this day. First of all, when you're that young, you meet this extraordinary charismatic man. You're pulled in this world that is completely, you know, beyond your experience. And you start to discover mystery after mystery. In addition to these political dangers that are happening, were you scared? Were you excited? How did you feel? And at what stage in your life, because I know you went back and forth to Girona for a long time, at what stage and how early did you really realize there's something going on here that is of really profound importance?
I think the night... Well, the thing I was scared about, to answer that, was that I would have to leave Jose. He was the center of the universe. I mean, he was the universe. I mean, I wanted to stay with him whatever happened. I mean, that was a given. And in Spain in those days, this was unheard of. You didn't, you know... I think the French woman in the house and me, well, I think we were the only two people that came from outside and stayed in that in that city in an unusual way. I think we were the only two. Anyway, that was my fear. Now, the thing when the night Jose made it clear, without saying I love you, he just said, you know, if you're going to stay, you have to be a La Novia. And I said, well, what's that? And I don't know what it was. Sound like a nun or something. He said, it's fiancé. And he wrapped his sweater around me like a kind of shawl. It held me. And I thought, I'm loved. It was wonderful. And I remember running down the stairs and running up the street. And I was so joyful. And I was so physical, you know, in those days, because I'd done a lot of dancing. And I'd run away from a lot of things in Paris. I mean, I was like an alley cat in many ways. I just ran to celebrate this love, you know. And I ended up in the Horse Quarter, which was, you know, it's called the Barrio Chino. And I thought, I'd never found it before. And there it was in the midst of these ancient thick walls out through which nothing ever penetrated. And there I was in this amazing area, and I thought, my God, I'm in love, I end up here, this is a bad sign. So I shot out of there, and I carried on running, and I ended up in the French woman's garden, and I jumped from the wall onto the tree, the palm tree, and as I swung in the tree, I heard these sounds that were like, I thought it was, no, I know I would call them Gregorian chants. That they were worse. That, no, it was something which, a sound which was very it was disturbing, it was imprisoning, it was unbearable, actually. And the church, the back of the church, the cathedral, it's a vast cathedral, the back of it comes right into the garden of the French woman, so that the sound was, all sounds came immediately into the garden and into the house. So I heard the sound, and I thought it was coming from the cathedral. They're doing some ceremony or something religious. But I saw through the shutters, because I was told the house is closed. Jose told me, you never go there. You never go to that place. When I said, why? He said, it's cursed. He'd made that clear. And I used to go up there because I wanted to see what was in there. I think I did, by that time, had got inside it. And I knew that, and all the dust and the kind of decay of a beautiful time, you know, and a very kind of rich time that house had known. There was a cup on the sink, and it was wet, big coffee cup. And I thought, it's recently wet. And I thought, my God, someone's here. You know, I got out of there pretty fast. But on this occasion, on this night, I swung in the tree and I heard the sounds, and I saw that through the shutters, which were partly open, there was a light. And there was a group around the table, a long table. And they were the ones making this chanting. They were having, it was clear, some ritual. There were artifacts on the table, like a big bowl. There was a stone. I remember a large stone. I also remember that Cocteau was there, because he turned and his eyes caught mine, and I thought, oh God, now Jose's going to know. Yeah, this is bad, I'd better get out of here. And I ran, back away from the house, and I met Louise. Now Louise is very important. He's called Louise of the Ark. He was the most modern person in all of this. And he was the one who actually knew what was going on, but never talked about it. He spoke about five languages, and he started a bar. He was a guide in the cathedral. He was a very close friend and also rival of Jose. But he started his own bar, which was unheard of in those days too. You know, there he was. He starts a bar. He has jazz playing. It's open till 3 o'clock. It's an amazing atmosphere. It's a nighttime place. And I ran in straight away into Louise, and he sort of said what I heard a lot afterwards too, in various ways, that nothing in Girona is as it seems. That sort of summed up that. Now, I saw the French woman during that time. I went back up there, and she invited me in for tea. And she was like a chameleon. One time she would look like, I thought she was 50. In fact, she was nearly 80. I would see her after one night in this alleyway. She came walking and in these amazing boots. I didn't recognize her. She looked about 30 years younger, and she was all made up. She was very glamorous, and she was going to dinner with some French who had newly arrived over the border, and they were going to the one smart place in Girona, restaurant, which was called Calros. And I thought she was a ghost because she was so unrecognizable. But I remember the smell of the perfume, so it's definitely her. So she had a mystery. She had a lot of knowledge. She was she certainly knew Paris. She had, from what I could tell, she certainly had a lot of wisdom. But she was uneasy. She was now uneasy. She wanted to leave that house. She wanted to go from the house. She wouldn't answer my questions. I was always full of questions. Didn't want to answer any of those. But she certainly, she did. I said, "What are you here?" She said, "I once loved a priest." I mean, I remember her saying that. And later on, I did get a lot of her letters. I mean, they came to me. But I saw a bit then, and during that time, I was aware of the nighttime meetings that these people had, and this huge stone that was visible at that time. I remember that. A European, North European person, very well dressed, coming into Girona and asking my friend Beryl questions about the stone and what went on in these meetings at night. So there was a kind of an infiltration about what was going on there. I had to go back to London. There was no two ways about that. I had to leave. It was certainly like leaving paradise. And Jose was going to join me. And at that time, he could not. That happened later. I went back to Spain. I went back again. I couldn't stay in London. I went back. And we were together then for quite a long time. And then we went to Paris, and then we had to part again. So there was a lot of coming and going. And, you know, I went my way, he certainly ran his. I got married, I had children, and I worked in America. I worked as a writer, I worked as an actress. I was doing many different things, but this place never, ever really left me. I mean, he was the one to open the champagne with. And during the one thing about it, linking it with Le Machiteau now, was that on the second visit, when I was very much with Jose as his fiance, Beryl was no longer there. I was very friendly with Louise of the Arc. He was teaching me languages. And we went to Salvador Esprit in Alain de Mar, and there was a lot of talk about Le Machiteau and the fact that there was someone called Corbu, who had bought the property of the priest from the maid, seemingly from the or Marie Denonneau. It was bought from her, or bought, I don't know who bought it, but it was bought, and it was going to be turned into a hotel. Indeed, it may have been, and there was some treasure there. That's what the owner said of the property, which brought down a huge amount of people with spades and shovels and so on, looking for treasure. And the Spanish felt that, well, they're saying that because they want to fill the hotel and make a good business. But he had to be stopped. That I remember. I remember also in 1964, this was when the French woman, Maria Tordes, was dead, going to Le Machiteau with Jose and with a doctor called Dr. Maskerill. I called him something else in the book, but now he's passed away, so his name is Maskerill. And we went to Le Chateau. Now, the thing was that the house with the tower had been pulled down, stone by stone. The tree had been uprooted. Now, this happened in 1964. And Maria Tordes had left before this, obviously. She'd gone to Paris. I remember when she was packing. Now, I was there on a visit when she was actually getting her things together. I went to see her, and a priest came in, and he was actually a cousin of Jose. And the priest came in, and he was telling her, warning her not to say things in front of me. That was basically what I remember about that. And she was getting her things, and I said, "Do you want to leave?" And she said, "I have to go because people want me to go." So she went to Paris she had an apartment, and I remember going there. I had gone there to Paris before, and we'd seen with Jose, it was in the late 50s, and we'd seen Jean Cocteau before he died. Jean Cocteau used to write to Jose. I did have a couple of those letters, which showed they had a relationship to do with the society. I think Maria, when she was ill, she was ready to talk. She was ready to talk to people. And I think Gerard de Sede was one of the people that she spoke to. And that was the time when I was in Paris. Now, I was married then. And I was with Jose. We'd gone to Paris. I wasn't married to Jose. I was married to somebody else. And we went to Paris. And we saw her before she died. And she had a ring, which was a priest's ring, which had initials on, which were BS, and had been scorched, had been thrown in fire. I didn't know what it was at the time, but I had seen it in Girona. Now, she died, and as far as I could tell, they warned her to say nothing, that she would live, that she would be all right, and to say nothing. And I remember the flat. There were many whole sort of gaps on the wall, white rectangular gaps where photos had hung. You know, there was, and lots of things were turned to the wall. It was a place. It was like a tomb which had been prepared to be really covered in. That was what it felt like.
So, at what stage do you really come to terms with who Maria Tordes is? You know, what is the French woman's secret? Because she does sound like someone who is so mysterious and who would have been really captivating and certainly intriguing to you, meeting her, as a young woman. And then following this and going to see her right before she dies and seeing all these amazing things, is it at that stage that you... Does Jose tell you who she is? How did you ultimately come to this realization? You said you came into some of her letters, and you tell an amazing story about her in the book, and I don't want to give too much of it away because people need to read the whole thing in context, but I'd love to know how you ultimately came to terms with who the French woman was and why she mattered so much.
Okay, I didn't know anything, but basically I only know what I saw and what I was witnessing. Jose told me nothing ever. Even when the books, like The Holy Blood and Holy Grail came out, the documentary, and it was Gerard de Sede was mentioned as the kind of forerunner of that, And I thought, that's a name I know, know about him. Ren Le Chateau, yes, been there. Went there with Jose and with Dr. Maskerill. And we'd gone there, in fact, in 64, we'd gone there to go through the house in Couillon to make sure there was nothing for those who had torn down the house in the tower to find. Those were called by various names. I thought it must be, was it the Vatican? And Jose said, no worse than that. But I remember the poor thieves in the night, they came too late, their secret is hidden. And it turned out to be El Americano, so then I thought it's Rockefeller. And then it turned out to be someone else altogether. But anyway, that was another later time. But when the Run the Chateau thing started, Jose was very involved with the Jewish Center, the Jewish Restoration in Girona, which had a great deal to do with the society, the ritual documents that they held, the artifacts, all of it. Here was a part of that, actually, in Girona, existing there from the 1100s. Nobody in Girona ever knew about it. We're now into the late 60s, early 70s. Nobody in the city knew anything about the Jewish Center. They didn't know that there had been the golden age of the Jews, that Girona was called the mother of Israel. They had no idea that behind these walls, because there were so many walls in the old part, that there was an area which had been the courtyard and surrounded by 24 houses of the Jews, which was closed in 1492 by order of the church. And it was covered over, and it was sort of more or less, I guess, cursed. That would be the way, I guess. And it was covered up as a wasteland. And a wall was obviously put along the Quai Fawcett, which is the main street, or along one side, because it was blocked. I can't remember exactly in what way, because all I see when I look back now is how it was when Jose opened up the street. He opened up an 8th century street, which led right into this place. Now, he must have known about it to have opened up the street anyway. We together went into the wasteland, and he said, "What do I do?" He said, "Do I stay here or do I leave?" And it became clear he could never leave, actually, Girona, never. But he found there, we did together find, by chance, not exactly by chance at all, we started digging, but I stumbled onto a kind of stepway going down, and he found, what was in fact a Jewish oven, and in there was a bread left from 1492. And of course, when it came out into the air, it dissolved immediately. And I think we both held it together. It was kind of quite symbolic in a way, most definitely. And it was like, we should open this. And I was involved in it for a while. And the thing about the work, the French woman and the tower and the house and all of that, was never mentioned. This was what it was all about now. It was about the experiments that the Jews had made there, traversing other realms. The portal was mentioned. There was a lot of documents. People came from all over the world to this place. It was a huge excitement, mainly because it was Kabbalah, and Gershom Scholem, the rabbinic scholar and writer about Kabbalah, well, great degree. I mean, he said, before he died, I spoke to him, and he said it was the most important site of Kabbalah in the world, and I started then working a lot in Girona. I wrote books about Girona, and I did a documentary for the BBC about the Jewish Center. Anyway, Jose occasionally mentioned a French woman. Now, I wrote a book called Albany Park, which was quite, noticed, let's put it like that. And my agent and publisher came to Girona because they wanted to see where this, had taken place, because it was about the 50s, mainly. And I was living near Run the Chateau. I was living in Ceret, which is halfway between Girona and Run the Chateau. And I did occasionally go to Run the Chateau. I didn't like it. I never have. And I went once. My brother-in-law, Christopher Chaplin, he wanted to acquire it from Henri Bouthillon, who was the then owner of the Villa Bethania and the tower. But Henri was looking for treasure, had been since he'd bought it, I think it was some 20 years before. I think he might have bought it off Noel Corbu. I don't know who exactly went in between there and that story, but I know Henri was really desperate and he got nowhere with looking for finding treasure. And my brother-in-law was very interested in the whole idea of the place. And I went there with him. Nothing much happened over there, as far as I know. And then I went again with a French taxi driver who lived in Sillette. And he said, Henri Boussillon, you must come out of here because you're dying here. You know, this is crazy. This is making you ill. Henri Boussillon did not leave, as far as I know. I think a society took it over in the end. I'm not sure. But I didn't really... I came from that place with a friend of mine into Girona, met my agent and publisher, and I was told by Louise Dioc that Josette was away. He was married now, he had a child, that he was away, he was out of town. And I took them up, these people up, feeling, you know, I wouldn't run into him, it would be perfectly all right. And I wanted to show them the French Garden, which were back then was kind of just a shambles and broken walls and everything. It's now restored by Jose. It is very, very beautifully done. And also to show them the Baraka, which was the house which belonged to Jose, small country, like a little country, I don't know what you call it, Baraka. It's a one-room little hut, stone hut. And I wanted to show them that because that was very, always very special. And you know, I was walking along, I see a figure in the distance, and yeah, it's Jose. You know, he's carrying some water and some oranges, and he's not away at all. He's there. So we were very happy to see each other, and we went to the hut and sat, and the publisher and my friend, and we all gathered around. And I said I'd been to Rennes Le Chateau, and he said, no point going there. It's nothing there. It's in here, in Girona. And then he revealed that the French woman, Maria Tordes, had been the friend of the priest from Rennes Le Chateau, that he used to come to the house, and that he was copying the tower, and that he had his architect, I think he was called Eli Bott, come to the house. There were letters in existence about the journeys. The ones I got were boring. There were better ones, but I never got those. And this is when I came to write the book, couldn't get those. But I realised that there was a whole sort of connection between Girona and Rennes Le Chateau, which I'd had no idea about. And I was very surprised he'd never mentioned it. For a while, he did, because the publisher was avid with keenness to get hold of the story and the documentation, anything. But you see, behind that was this society, the old, the ancient stuff. That's what was behind it all. So in a way, the Saunier story was kind of very much on the skin, on the surface. It was not interesting to Josette Caresse. Now, I didn't hear any more. Nothing more happened there until 2003, when Jose had a heart attack. He was basically running Girona, the cultural side of it. He was doing the flower exhibitions every year, which is a very prestigious event in Girona. He was doing the ceremonies during the year, the festivals, the art exhibitions. He was also restoring and making sure that the old places weren't pulled down, and you've got a kind of body shop standing there. You know, he because it was very much globalization was coming in there. He was fighting it. I didn't hear anything until 2003, when there he comes to this spa where I'm staying in Caldas in Malagueña with some letters. And these are the letters to do with the society, the priest's visits, his relationship with Maria Tordes, her story, and what it was sort of all about, which was most definitely a society which had held secrets from beyond known time. I mean, going back in sort of Atlantis or prior, it seemed to go beyond any recorded history. Now, Girona was 4,000 years old, according to the documents, and the stones, the walls were said in parts to be 4,000 years old. Right? But nowadays, they've done a lot of discovery that Girona is much older than that and could go back 25,000 years. At a time when there were tribes, Celtic tribes, there weren't Iberians, as they were called. There were Celtic tribes who lived in the area because it was a very suitable place to survive. And they found all these bones and relics and things which go back even further. So it seems not to have actually the history date of its beginning that we always, one always believed. And the thing then, of course, he said to me, I'd already written, about four books about Girona, and I'd done a play there, and a film had been made, Siesta, one of the books. I'd done several documentaries. I'd done a lot of work on Girona. So I probably seem like the right person to do the outing, let's say, of the information, because I knew a lot about the people. But I was of the place, but I wasn't in it. I wasn't a Catalan. So I think in many ways I was chosen, but I was given part of the material, but never all of it. And so my job had been to go and research and find the material. I understood by this that some of this society, and I certainly understood that about three of them, really didn't want me doing this. And that a lot of people asked me, did I feel danger? No, not really. But I found a lot of... some of the photographs were switched. There was I got a Catalan scientist. He was young. I got him as my assistant. I had two assistants. One who spoke very good French, and she was great. She was in Tova Fitzgerald. She was incredible. Norwegian. She was very good. She knew Jose very well, and she could get places that I couldn't. And the young scientist, he was about 33, he could go to the Vatican and do a little shopping there, which I couldn't do. I mean, so in a way we worked together because we got absorbed by this. We wanted to find out what is this about. We had to know. I met people, I had no idea lived in Catalonia. But I realized that here we were in the end finding a ritual group that could traverse space and time, much as the Kabbalists had in the medieval times, that they had ways of traveling and understanding and transforming and returning to this planet and opening up for a better, let's say, better outcome. They couldn't do it without knowledge by the local people, because frequently a vision had appeared in this city of the woman with La Donna con la Coppa, the woman with the cup that they said was the Magdalene. And she brought with her the most incredible beneficence and just the most wonderful healing. Many people have seen this. The last vision, as far as I know, is in 76, February 76, which some hundreds of people have seen it. But if the church did not accept it, it was not ever to be talked about. It was not considered a miracle or even an appearance. And it seemed in a way that whenever this came around, that there was always water appearing You know, there was a fountain, there was a sort of stream, something always appeared with water. And it did remind me a bit of Bernadette Soubirous, you know, in Lourdes. I wondered that again, because that was just the road. I wondered if that was the same there. I don't know. But anyway, I did all the research. I did City of Secrets, and then they said, right, now you go and find out what it's all about. It's always something that came up after the thing was finished. So the next thing I found out was the portal, was the journey of the 11 sites under the constellation of the original Great Bear and seven stars, in this magic square 49 of Venus. And that's the one I did immediately after finishing, just writing the first draft. I did that, which just about nearly killed me. I was too old for it, but I did it. It took about 2.5-3 weeks. And that was the journey that the initiates had to take. And Sonny apparently had been on this journey. He had done this journey. Whether he finished it, I mean, is doubtful. And other people, too, had come to do the journey. So this journey had been known about, I mean, for years. And certainly the date 1933 was very important, because that apparently is when Otto Rahn came there and bought El Americano, which was the one that apparently had taken a great interest in stone by stone in that house with the tower. So the other thing I would say, too, was that Sonia, just, you know, not to forget him, you know, I mean, his job, it would seem, was to copy the tower in Girona. And the peak, to the two towers pointed to the center, it was the center point. It's called the Golden Mean, that's what I understood. Golden Mean, Golden Cup. The center point was the peak of Canigou. That was the center point. That was the portal. So that's what the towers energized. Some charge between these two places, and it sort of opened or made possible the portal.
So 50 years after you first enter Girona into this magical journey, the journey continues. Almost a full 50 years later, Jose says to you, you need to go take this journey. How surprised were you that there was still this enormous piece of the puzzle for you to go find and complete? And did he give you the path of this journey? And if he didn't, how did you find what the path was?
He gave me the guide to take me. The guide was... she was a highly initiated human being. She was ageless. I mean, she seemed to defy age. She'd done the journey many times. She'd done it once for herself, and then the rest of the time for the other initiates and people she took on the path. It was ended on Mount Canigou at the portal. There was no obligation to enter the portal, but you were prepared on that journey to do so. But on the journey, it was a spiritual and purifying and strengthening and evolving journey, which means it was tough and it was hard and there was very little lightness in it. It was something that I would have given up willingly after about 5 minutes, quite honestly. But I stayed with it because Jose told me to do it. So, I mean, that shows how mad that was. But I did, you see, I'm also useful to them because, you know, the thing I was born, but, I'm a medium and a clairvoyant. That is very useful to them. That was another, I think, quite useful thing. And I could, you know, I'm a seer, so I'm clairvoyant. And so that gave another kind of dimension to the to my being chosen to go on a journey. You know, they didn't think they were wasting their time. The other people I knew of that had gone here, one was Salvador Dali, who I did know at one time, because I'd stayed in Port Legat with him, and with my first husband, Michael Chaplin, we were there. And in the 60s, and he'd done the picture, it's about the time he did the picture of Perpignan Station, and he'd had a portal experience. I remember Erasmi, because he was around, and there were a lot of people around Dali at that time, but he was most definitely an initiate and had done the journey. The other was Cocteau, who my father-in-law, Charlie Chaplin, said, because he knew Cocteau quite well. And in fact, I remember sort of years ago that we went to see a chapel in the south of France that Cocteau had just designed. He knew, Charlie was very into other realms and life after death and clairvoyance, amazingly. And I mean, that was a new discovery, really, because I never put that together with him, but he was certainly one of the sensitives, yeah, most definitely. And the other, Cocteau, there was Jacinto Verdiguer, the Catalan poet, who was a priest, at the same time as Berenger Saunier. And he was a charismatic priest who was in the care of Count Comilas, who was a Catalan owner of a huge empire of ships. You know, he was incredibly wealthy, and he had this dozens of ships that went around the world. So Jacinto Verdiguer used to go with the Comilas family. And then I think Count Comilas did the journey with the Journey of the 11 Sites with Jacinto Verdiguer. And after the portal experience on Canigou, he wrote a poem, the epic poem Canigou. And he also became visibly clairvoyant and used healing and exorcism on. And I don't know if he had parishioners, because I don't think he belonged to a parish, but he did this on the sick and on the well wherever he could. And the church got rid of him. They just said, right, you're expelled. And he was very, very driven and energized by the portal experience. And he died soon afterwards, I think. I can't remember exactly when it was. He had TB. And although he'd been expelled and kind of banished, you know, from society, when he died, his funeral was the biggest funeral Spain had ever seen. I mean, it was apparently thousands of people went into the streets to pay, you know, respect to this charismatic priest and healer and this being from another time, another place. Anyway. There were many people who'd had accounts of their journeys, and I was only shown four, and they were to help me to understand the journey and to carry on with the courage and realize that I wasn't failing, and I did do it. And then, like everything else about the story, the minute that's done, and the book was already going to press, that I then find out another major kind of, I'm given another major piece of the puzzle, like who the El Americano is. And I, oh my God, I've missed it. Because, you know, I didn't get it. And I wasn't even told it. It's not like someone said, oh, did you know about him? Because the Catalans aren't like that anyway. Even, you know, the society, the hidden society, it isn't like that. It's, you have to kind of find things out. You have to work for it. And the, you know, it's a, it's city of passage. It's not a place where people really kind of query, you know, secrets or rituals. They get on with their own lives. They're into survival. They're dealing with their land, going to the bank, to the bar. They're not really into what these people have come there worshipping ISIS, you know, years ago. I mean, hundreds of years ago, 2,000 years ago, I suppose. ISIS worshippers and Phoenicians came there, and the Greeks. I mean, all of these people came to Catalonia. It's always had this draw. Charlemagne went there, and he also had a visionary experiences there. So it was no surprise, really, I suppose, that Hitler went there. He went to Canigou. Himmler was in Girona. Now, the Nazis were busy looking for the portal and the activator, which was known as the Holy Grail. Otto Rahn went to Girona. He went to the mountain, to Canigou, and it said he took El Americano with him. And then I got into that, and I thought, you know, I've got to go on that trail. I must find out more about that. And I suddenly thought, I can't. You know, I've got to, at this stage, put it down. And so I would say, people have asked, you know, about how does it feel to have actually entered a portal, have had a portal experience. And I won't go into that because it's in the book, but I would say that it was a privilege and an incredible experience, in as much as afterwards I felt free, which is a rare thing, to feel free, to feel that there is so much more than I can possibly know being sort of here. I feel like on Earth, I'm in the suburbs of the galaxy, you know, and there's a lot more out there. Well, and that's really wise, I've got to say, yeah.
It's been an amazing journey for you, and it's certainly been an amazing journey for us as your readers to go along with you on it. And the journey continues. I'm so grateful for your work, Patrice, because I think it's so full of authenticity and courage. I really think it's unique and it's magical, and I recommend it to everybody. And we're out of time, and I feel like we've just scratched the surface. So I really hope you'll come back with us, because I think we have so many more things to talk about it. If you're willing to, we'd love to have you back.
That would be a pleasure. It really would. I would love that. Thank you.
Well, that means that we're concluding this episode of The Spirit Revolution by saying a brief farewell to Patrice, but a welcome back soon. And from Kathleen and me, until the next time.
The truth against the world.